The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Not even sitting down.
My keys are in my hand. I have my jacket on, and I'm squatting, but there's no chair. And welcome to We the People Radio, where...
I don't think you can say squatting.
It wouldn't be any fun if we didn't challenge ourselves to see how late we can be.
The challenge.
Did you just get here?
Pretty much.
Poor Bob. Bob, do you have a heart attack every Sunday morning?
No, Bob was here after me.
No way! Did you have a heart attack?
I just threw Bob under the bus.
Okay.
No, but for some unknown reason, I was whistling The Odd Couple when I came in. So, Aaron, take it away.
I got to get my chair.
I was going to get you a chair, but I couldn't see two. I could only see one. You're hidden behind the door. So, hey.
Hey.
Folks in the world, if you were to go to today, the webpage is going to be important. Not during the show necessarily, but for after the fact. We're going to talk about wolves. And so before you're thinking wolves, you know, who cares about that?
A lot of people
should. Even if you think you don't care about it, the music will be worth sticking around for. I don't know what it is, but I'm sure it'll be fun. And we have John Williams from Oregon State University on with us, who is an agriculture guy.
And, you know, I might add that...
Now that you're sitting down?
Now that I'm sitting down and I can talk. when you and I were chatting about this topic a couple of weeks ago, after we had our conversation, I was... completely and thoroughly scared.
Well,
you wouldn't think that this would be scary, but it really is.
Well, it's a when you look at let me complete my loop here. Okay, wethepeopleradio.us. The webpage is important because on there, John Williams' research and stuff. Some of it is video, and some of it's kind of. One facet of it is really very fascinating. A facet is fascinating. That's kind of a.
Is that an oxymoron or a misnomer?
No, it's just a, you know, you shouldn't do that. Anyway.
Bad English?
Yeah, just something, awkwardness. So they put like tracking collars on the cattle, then tracking collars on the wolves. And when they do that, you can see the interaction. They're literally little moving dots on the screen. So you can see, here comes
the big bad wolf.
Well, pretty much here comes the wolf. So here's like I can't remember. I think it's the blue dot is the wolf. I think it's orange and red, actually. But here comes the dot, right? And you can see, what do the cattle do? Do they run away? Do they huddle together? Do they hide? Do they just part? And he goes through the middle. And it's very interesting. It's not as cut and dried as you would think.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of interaction, and there's a lot of, like, what's this doing to the animals? How much is it stressing them out? But there, I sent out a promo about the show. By the way, if you don't get those, go to wethepeopleradio.us, and on there you'll see a thing that says sign up for our list or something like that. It's near the top. And I only send out one a week. If some weeks I don't really actually get that handled. But actually, we've been pretty good.
Sending them out
one a week. And so you have the gist of the show. And then that email after the fact also links to the podcast. So even if you didn't open the email till late or you forwarded it next week, when they click the listen button, they'll get the recording of the show. So it's a useful email.
And on that note.
Thanks to Robert.
Every show that we've ever done is individually linked on wethepeopleradio.us so that you can go back into the archives and look at the volume of information that we have there on a number of subjects that fall under limited government, adherence to the Constitution, and fiscal responsibility. And you can click on any one of those links, listen to the show, email it out. And if you do have a question for today's guest or you have some experiences on this topic, you can give us a call at 530-605-4567.
Yeah.
So no excuses not to get plugged in.
No. And no excuses not to inform other people, because at the end of the day, you know, we're going to be – and I say, you know, say we, the folks who care about the Republic, kind of the way we've always known it, with the Constitution, the document that is not written in pencil, you know, written in ink, being the boss of everything we do. So we're into some kind of weird gray areas. I think everybody has kind of figured that out with, you know, guns and speech and drones and stuff. Well, the wolf thing is part of that pattern. It's not just an animal thing. Whenever you see that, you know, the environmental community or the animal rights community is on some, you know, some kick, I guess.
There's a reason for it.
That's all part of the big political picture. That's not just animals. It's not just land use. It's part of a bigger picture. So, you know, I'm not going to ask John to speculate on any of that. But I think those people that live in areas like that, you can see that introducing a very large predator, top-level predator, into an area is kind of designed to move us around. I mean, we're the ones with the tracking collar.
Yeah, destroy our economy, destroy our livelihood, destroy our land, so that we have no choice but to move further inland.
Yeah.
Into the cities.
You just see things change. You just see a dramatic impact. Mm-hmm. So I sent out the promo on the program. I got a thing back from a guy who said, I should look at what he said. I should read it to you because it was kind of like, what? He basically told me that he lives down by Red Bluff and that they have no trouble with the wolves by his daughter's ranch. Mm. And so I'm just
– yet.
I would just submit that potentially they're not wolves, for one, because a lot of people mistake different things for wolves. But it would be behoove all of us to pay attention and listen because – it's not going to be as – and then I have people on the other eastern Shasta County, not all of them by any means, but a few responses from that area where I've gotten back, oh, well, we'll just do the three S's, shoot, shovel, and shut up.
Mm.
And it's like, hey, little wake-up call. That's not really one of the choices.
Because they're being tracked.
Well, and for a myriad of reasons, and John will lay that out for them. So for all the reasons that you might think this doesn't apply, it does. It
gives a little Red Riding Hood a whole new meaning.
Exactly. So we just, you know, we hope you get a lot out of this. The chat room is up, isn't it? Is it? I see it. I see people signing on and signing off. So if you go to wethepeopleradio.us, you click on the listen button, even if you're listening on a real radio. If you click that button you know, obviously you can shut your sound off so you don't have to have it coming out of two places, but your chat room is a place to send us messages as well as calling in. And the number here is 530-605-4567. So, Bob, would it totally blow the whole deal if we took an early break and then had John Williams join us?
We can do that, or we can introduce John right now and then come back right after the break.
Okay, tiebreaker vote.
Let's introduce John.
There you go. Is he in there? Is he hiding in the box?
He's in here.
Hey, how are you?
Good morning.
Hey, how you doing?
All right.
Okay, so we've got a lot of ground to cover today, don't we?
We do, yes.
So let's see. The highlights we have on your bio is that you finished your master's in rangeland resource at Oregon State, and you also have a PhD in range science from the College of Natural Resources at Utah State University.
Not me.
It's not you.
No, I bet I give it to you.
I like it.
I have a bachelor's degree at Oregon State University in animal science.
Is there another John Williams at Oregon State?
Oh, there's seven of us.
No way.
I don't know of any other in range.
That's hilarious.
I have a master of agriculture in rangeland resources, agricultural resource economics, and animal science.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, we've got that.
Well, I hope Robert out there that put the webpage together and he pulled it off the alumni page.
I don't have anything to do with that page.
You should be getting a lot more money. Bottom line is, I think you can use this to your advantage.
Yeah, because, you know, PhDs never impressed me a whole lot. So.
Well, it doesn't really impress, well, you know, piled high and deep. There are many jokes about that.
Are you the John Williams that lives in Pendleton?
I'm not. That would be John D. Williams.
That's funny. I just scrolled down and I saw Pendleton. I'm like, even I knew that was wrong.
Yeah, that's John. He gets a lot of my emails. We just share them back and forth. I'm an enterprise, so.
I love it. Okay, so so the elusive other John Other Williams. We'll make your middle name O.
Yeah, I have no middle name. It's NMN.
So I guess O will work.
That'll do.
John O.
That's hilarious. I never read people's bios either. See, that's why I don't do it. I don't like it. I'm not doing it again.
All right.
I hope he's got to talk about wolves.
At some point.
I hope so, too.
Actually, I've already heard him do that, so I've got that handled.
All right.
So give people a little overview here, about a minute, and then we've got to scurry off, take a break, and that'll keep us on track today.
Okay, well, you know, I've been working with wolves since 1996 when the rancher in our county who was coming in as the president of the Oregon Cattlemen's Association came into my office and says, John, we have a problem. Wolves are being introduced right across the canyon from us, and we need to get on this. And so as an extension agent that works with agriculture, that it's our goal to help make agriculture successful, I've been tracking, involved with, and working with the wolf issue for those many, many years. And it is interesting, and I'll walk you through it as we go forward, the chronology. And I think it's useful how it happened here in Oregon, in Northeast Oregon, as you look at it coming to your county as well. And what you do see, what you don't see, and come, what are the expectations when they actually get there?
I think that's a good way to start, because at the end of the day, it doesn't come in with it's not a slow process. It's kind of a little bit more like an avalanche, huh?
Well, they're here. They're in your community. They're around, and you really don't see them. And there's always the bait. I saw tracks. I saw this. I saw that. But you don't see them. And then some morning you get up. And what happened to us is the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife biologist showed up after a Saturday afternoon with his family with a video of 16 wolves in one pack.
Oh, boy.
And so it is. It's kind of in the shadows. And they're around. And you really don't see much trouble until one day it's there. And then you've got the problem, and that's how it springs on many, many communities. And I've been told the same thing from the Idaho folks. That's the way it happens.
Mm. Okay, so on that note, it's going
to
apply.
Good way to start.
Yep. Any of us who aren't living in downtown San Francisco, it's going to apply to us. So we'll be back with John Williams, middle name Other. Apparently, the right bio is on the webpage, and the other stuff I told you about's there too. So we didn't lie about everything. You're listening to We the People Radio here at KCNR 1460 AM, community radio for the North State.
When they move into your neighborhood, they take over but good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body. Then they go. What shall we do about them? In touch with the ground. I'm on the
you hit another one out of the ballpark. Hey, did we mention that you were joining your hosts, Aaron Ryan, Elizabeth Woodward, and Bob Martin with We the People Radio? So, John Williams.
I think we skipped that part.
We did. As we slid into our seats or, you know, bent over to the microphone and...
You got here to do the opening line. That's what matters.
Is that amazing or
it's
what?
It's always bad when you walk through the door and the music's playing. It's like, no. Stressful.
I don't know what it is about Sunday morning.
No, I don't know either.
I have no idea.
Who possessed us to do this on Sunday morning? Oh, yeah, Carl.
Oh, yeah. That was his idea.
That was my water.
So, John Williams, we're going to talk about wolves. Let's let her go.
Okay. Well, the first thing I thought we ought to talk about is just the wolf itself. It is a very controversial topic. The wolf is going to come, and I don't know. You've got one wolf down there in Northern California
that we know of,
Having an animal science degree, I can tell you one wolf doesn't reproduce, and it takes a mate, and that's a big issue for you right now. If you want wolves, you need to be wondering how that lone wolf is going to find a mate. And I was doing a wolf symposium yesterday, and the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife biologist said, you know, That wolf in Northern California may just live out its solitary life down there and not reproduce. And if that's the case, it would move the introduction of wolves in your community back until there actually is a breeding pair. And that's an important thought to have, is that this one wolf left Wallowa County and headed down there and decided to join up with the Californians, and he's there by himself. And the first thing you'll see, you'll probably very seldom see him. Very few people do see a wolf. And the first thing you're going to see is tracks. And there's a couple of characteristics about tracks that I think can help a person if they're wondering if that happens to be a wolf track. And I encourage people to report whatever they find. We're all better off with knowledge. And so if you think you've found a wolf track, take a picture of it. Take a picture of it with something that lets you get perspective of size. What the ODF&W wolf biologist told us was, if you're not sure if it's a wolf track, it's probably not, size-wise. Because by the time the wolf pup is out of the den and the rendezvous site, and the wolf pups usually are in their den in the May country in our neck of the woods, and then late May, early June, they come out and they're in what's a rendezvous site, and that's where the mother teaches them their juveniles, and they keep really close rein on them. And by the time they get out away from the mother and are spreading out very far, their pup tracks are bigger than any coyote track you've ever seen. And so what I keep telling people, if you think it might be a coyote track, it's not a wolf track. When you see a wolf track for the first time, your response will be, ooh, there's a wolf track.
Hey, John, give us an idea of what that looks like.
It's probably 3.5 to 4 inches across. And that's if you're not in something like soft snow or powdered dust or something that spreads out. But it may well be a hind foot is smaller than a front foot. It'll look the same as a regular dog track, but just much, much larger. And then if you can see a trail, a series of tracks, as I said, the front track is larger, the front foot is larger than the back. And they will do what's called overstep, which means they put their front foot down, and when the back foot comes down, it comes down in front of where the front foot was. So if you see a big track and then a little track, and then a big track and a little track, that's not two animals. That's the front foot and the back foot. And they'll either overstep, or many times you'll see a single set of tracks that are in a straight line, because the back foot will fall right into the front foot track. And so the size, just the virtual size of 3.5 to 4 inches, and then if you can see that multiple tracks going down a road or something, they will many times be in a single track. They don't go back and forth, left to right. They go in a straight line. And you may only see one looking like it's just a two-legged animal going down there. And that's rather distinct once you see it. And so that's, like I said, that's the first thing you'll see. There will be lots of sightings, and there will be lots of sightings that people are positive it was a wolf. And usually when a community finally begins to believe that it is a wolf, you will have a preponderance of evidence, as multiple people see it. Multiple tracks are seen in the basic same area. And when I say that, a contemplate that wolves have a very large range. You can't begin to fathom when somebody says, well, it couldn't have been that wolf because he was over on my ridge in the afternoon and you saw him in the morning, you know, 5 miles away. That's nothing. Our research shows that the wolves will travel, and I'll get to that later, over 10 miles a day on average. And we've had recorded days where they went up to 30 miles in a day. So if a wolf decides to take a little bit of a walkabout and he decides to move and go see some new country, he could take a couple of week circle and be gone from wherever he's settled in, and he might go a couple hundred miles during that week and then circle back and a lot of times come back to where he kind of feels comfortable. So Distance is something that isn't a big thing for these wolves. They travel very easily. As I said, they move out, and they have very large feet, and they travel in a single track. So that's probably the best thing that I can offer you when you're first looking for a wolf sign. They're lazy.
Okay.
They like to walk down roads. Mm. And so don't be surprised if you see what you think is a wolf track or a wolf sign, and they're heading up down a road, particularly if you're on a steep hillside or something where there's not many options to easily get from one place to another, and the road cuts through that country, then that's where they'll be, is they'll be on that road going up and down the trail.
Interesting. And would they, I mean, if there are just a few wolves in an area, would they be near people, or would you really have to look for them?
They don't care. People are they're an endangered species where they have been protected, which means they have no fear of humans. Their experience with humans has not been negative. And like any other canine, if they have no negative responses around humans, then they'll come close to a house, they'll come close to people, they'll come down roads. Our research has shown that we see no response of the number of times that a wolf was close to a house in comparison to when they were further away from a house. So distance from a house seems to have no effect, and we've got some research data to back that up. The other thing that I would offer you, we see the pictures of the big wolves, and on the internet you can go look at some guy holding up 185 or 190 pound wolf. That's not normal. The normal size of a wolf in Northeast Oregon, in fact, the largest wolf taken or measured in Oregon's 135 pounds, and our alpha male in the Amnaha pack, where all the depredations have occurred, oscillates between 115 pounds and 90 pounds, depending on the season and how much he's been moving and how much he's been eating and so forth. So yeah, they're a large dog, but they aren't. As big as you normally see the big ones on the internet.
And you said that they always travel in packs?
No. Well, obviously not. They disperse like Aurora 7 did. He took off by himself, and that's the typical. So what a scenario that happened is that they're in a pack, they're a pup, they grow up as a family member in a pack, and they're protected and fed and so forth by the whole pack. While they're in the den, all the males of the pack will go out and hunt for the bitch that's in the mother, and she will stay in the den, and the males go out and kill something, eat their stomach full, turn around and beat feet back to the den and regurgitate the food and feed both the mother and the pups. And they'll do that the whole time they're in the den. We actually had one occasion where there was a collared wolf that killed an elk 30 miles from the den. Wow. And the collar went off, and 6 hours later the collar went off again, and he was at the den. So he actually traveled very close to 30 miles and that's a straight line 30 miles, and you know the wolf didn't travel straight line. He went up and down and around in 6 hours. So the first thing when you're thinking about wolves, you need to change the scale of what you think, just because they move so quickly and so easily. But then while they're in the den and while they're young, the males of the pack are feeding the young and the mother. Then they move out to a rendezvous site. And that will be somewhere not too far from the den, but not in the same place usually. It might be more of an open, flat, clear cut or a meadow or something with some good hiding cover on the edge. And it gives them a chance to romp and for the mother to teach a few skills. as they get a little bit older, the mother will go out and teach, and then the pack will teach them to hunt. And so having livestock or something very close to a rendezvous site is really putting yourself at risk. And if that rendezvous site, which, oh, by the way, we don't get to choose it, happens to be, you know, in your neck of the woods, then that's what you're up against. Not too long after, within a few months, those wolves are, the pups have grown up enough, they're pretty much independent. And they stay in the pack from then until they're 2 years old. And when they're 2 years old, they disperse, 2 to 3. And so it's a year of, you have a pup, and then you have your yearling, and then you're kind of kicked out the door. And the wolves are very social animals. They do like to be in packs. And so that second year, they're off on their own and they disperse. And at that point, the number of wolves in that pack will go down. In the Imnaha pack, we had just a few wolves. If I go back, the first pups in Oregon were the Imnaha pack, and that happened in 2008, were confirmed. And that was just a couple of pups in 2008. By 2010, we knew the wolves were out there during that time, but still hadn't seen much and so forth. That was 2010 when we got the video with 16 wolves. And that was the year that depredations just exploded in the county, and we started having cattle, livestock kills rather regularly. Then in 2011, there was a dispersal year, and we spread out, and there was, by the end of 2011, there was a discussion that there was only 4 wolves left in the Imnaha pack. Now that was disputed by most people in Mullah County, because the number was probably closer to 8 or 9. In fact, the people that live out there all the time say it dropped down to 9. They also believe that it had gotten higher than 16 before it dropped. So when they dispersed, the numbers go down, and then you kind of see things settle down a little bit around you. And you have another year in 2011, there was only one pup that came out of any known wolf pack in Oregon. And nobody really knows why. This year, there are 5 breeding pairs in 2012, and some packs have as many as 6 pups in them. So it varies a lot, but by the time they're 3 years old, they've been kicked out. They go out and find their own range, and that kind of keeps the density down, and it keeps the expanding the area in where the wolves are at. So I guess that's the thing that's important to remember, is about the time you figure a wolf out, he'll change doing what he's doing.
So what you know, you don't know, and good luck to all you people who think there is certainty in this. Okay, we're going to come right back in 2 minutes. We're going to thank our advertisers here at KCNR. Are we doing that, Bob? Okay, just checking. You are listening to We the People Radio here at KCNR, 1460 AM, community radio for the North State. I didn't see that one coming.
I didn't either.
How?
Nice spin. So we are talking to John Williams, all things wolves. It's not not what you would expect.
This would be John Williams, the associate professor at the Department of Rangeland Resource.
John, air quotes, the other Williams.
Yeah, there you go.
But before we get back, to John, let's jump on the phone to our caller, Fred. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning.
So, what say you?
Well, I have a question for the guy about, he said that this wolf is up there alone, and over the years when we lived up in Dana, Ann and I saw a wolf, and my parents had seen wolves, but they weren't these huge gray wolves, they were timber wolves, and I was wondering, and we knew of people, the old-timers, who knew about the wolves and knew where some dens were up in, you know, more remote areas. And will this gray wolf join up with the timber wolves? And what kind of differences are them? Are there?
Okay. You've brought up a really good point. And I probably need to correct myself. We have only been benevolent enough to send you one wolf from Northeast Oregon. I have no clue how many wolves were historically or still in the background in your Northern California country. It's my understanding that along the coast, and that you guys would fit along the coast, as in, you know, not east of the in the high desert country yet. The Pacific gray wolf was a smaller wolf that mm-hmm. was indigenous to that country, and you had indicated that was what you had seen. And they are a different wolf than the Canadian gray wolf, which is a much larger wolf. My understanding, you're talking down in the 50 to 65 pound range with the Pacific wolf, and
I would put a coyote in that 50 pound range.
You got a lot bigger coyotes than we do, so.
Well.
Our big coyote is about 35 pounds, so.
Oh, wow.
So.
Okay, but it was bigger. It was the size of a really big German Shepherd, and we had a 150-pound German Shepherd.
And, well, like I said, I can't tell you what you've
got. What
we
saw,
yeah. I can tell you that the taxonomy of wolf in the United States has changed drastically. And I think it has changed as much politically for the political reasons as it has biological reasons. 10, 15, 20 years ago, there were up to 35, if I remember right, and don't quote me on that exact number, but a whole bunch of subgroups of the wolf subspecies. And over time, I think they begin to realize that the reality is that there's actually just some basic differences in size and the type of place where they live and so forth, and the lumpers have gotten a hold of the taxonomy now, and I believe that the world, the political, the scientific world now says there are six different subspecies of Canis lupus, if I say that right, in the United States, and so uh-huh. The Canadian gray wolf would be one of those. And the Mexican gray wolf that's down in the south would be one, and this Pacific wolf would be another one. And they do interbreed. And so if one of ours gets in with some of the smaller ones, the Pacific side, they could for sure have pups.
Yeah, well, I guess it was this, had the gray wolf been in this area before? I mean, not this OR7, but as a species.
Well, you're kind of on the line. In the dry side, after you've crossed over the crest, that's probably the more gray wolf, the Canadian type. And of course, there's a lot of people in our country and that say the Canadian gray wolf is not the wolf that we had originally.
Uh-huh.
And I don't even discuss that. And all I tell people is that train's left the station.
Yeah.
This is the wolf that has been planted into Idaho and Montana. It can and could well migrate down from Canada. It's the wolf that's going to be in Northeast Oregon for my lifetime. And so we can argue about whether it was the right one or not, But it definitely is the one that's here, and it's the one that we're going to be dealing with in the future. And their range runs clear down into the high desert country. The Pacific wolf, which is the smaller one, when you get over into the more the wetter side, then you start getting into that smaller wolf. That's a coastal wolf, from what I understand.
Well, if I'm correct, I think Fish and Game says that, you know, there hasn't been a wolf reported or something since 1924, and wolverines have been extinct in the area for, you know, a long, long time. But I kind of have the feeling that if they don't see one pass in front of them while they're sitting in their pickup with binoculars, then they classify it as extinct, because in 1969 in the summer I saw a pair of wolverines in our on our ranch in northeastern Shasta County, and there was no mistaking it. I went in and looked them up in a book, you know, and yeah, that's what it was. And yet, you know, they're not supposed to be around, but they are. And I think the same, except for this, what I would call a non-native wolf, this gray wolf, there are wolves there. Anyway, that's just my comment, and thank you very much. It's really interesting listening to you.
You brought up another good point. Confirmed wolf.
Thanks, Fred.
Confirmed wolf sighting. If in Northeast Oregon, if you see a wolf and you report it, it's a suspected wolf sighting. And it's never confirmed wolf unless you have a picture of it that is clear enough that you can actually really tell that it was a wolf, or that an ODF&W employee was the one that saw the wolf. That's how you get a confirmed sighting. And so you do, there is a frustration level that it kind of has to be an ODF&W person that is the individual who sees it, and then it's a confirmed wolf. I kind of have a little bit of an understanding where they're at, because there's literally hundreds of wolf sightings that are turned in that you have no thought that actually was probably a wolf. But there's also all sorts of other individuals who are very knowledgeable and have lived with them and seen them, been around them, that should have been included in the confirmed kills. Which just brings us to a discussion about the wolf issue is a social issue, not a biological one. Wolves have no problem living wherever they want to live. The issues around wolves are social. That's what drives it. It's what drives the laws, the rules, and the regulations. Ed Bangs years ago said that wolves only need two things to exist. They need an adequate ungulate base. An ungulate means a cloven hoof type of an animal, which would be elk, deer, cattle. They'll actually eat horses that aren't cloven hoofed, but an adequate food base and tolerant people. And that's been one of the harder one to get is the tolerant people.
Yeah, and we're going to solve that now with some goofy legislation. I think, you know, when we come back from this quick break here, I'd like you to address, I know we'll get into it later, but before the top of the hour, I'd like you to address the idea that ranchers and farmers will be able to control this, because if they start taking down their livestock, they'll just be able to shoot them.
All right.
Because that's just a huge misnomer, and we should really put that in the box before we end the first half of this. Okay.
All right.
We're going to take a really quick break. We'll be back with John Williams. We're talking about wolves here on We the People Radio at KCNR, 1460 AM, community radio for the North State.
You know what we're going out with, don't you?
No.
It's a theme to Dances with Wolves.
Oh, you got to like it.
Everybody, I don't think we're going to be dancing.
Keep your clothes on, everybody.
That I see walking in these woods. Why, it's Little Red Riding Hood. Hey there, Little Red Riding Hood. You sure are.
everything a big bad wolf could want.
Yep, she's looking lip smacking good. That's hilarious. Yum yum.
You knew that was coming. It was just a matter of time, huh, John?
So we are wrapping up our first hour of the We the People Radio. We're talking to John Williams. We're talking about wolves, not what you thought it would be. And John, so let's dispel all the rumors that if a big bad wolf comes onto your property and goes after your livestock, that you can just shoot it.
Or your kids. Or
you or know. Your kids.
Yeah, not true. In fact, in Oregon, and of course you're crossing a state line, and I will tell you that in Oregon, a third of the eastern third is delisted federally, but it's still listed under the State Endangered Species Act, and so we still have significant restrictions. In fact, I think in the whole state of Oregon, you live by the Oregon Wolf Plan, and I'm going to just give you a little bit about that history, because what has happened in Washington, we wrote our plan in 2003 and thereafter. Washington is like 9 or 10 packs already, and they're just now writing their wolf plan. And I suspect that California is probably looking at writing a wolf plan. And what Washington did was they looked over the border and they said, Oregon's got one, let's look and see what they had. So I think it gives you a little bit of, it isn't just, well, that's Oregon, it doesn't count in California, because I suspect yours will look a lot like ours when you're done. The limitations are, if a wolf comes into your property and is chasing, testing, cornering your cattle, you, without a permit from the state, you have the right to scare the wolf off. You can say, shoo, go away.
And how easy is that to do?
You can fire in the air, you can do whatever you want to do, but you cannot hurt that wolf. And so how easy is it? Well, let me tell you a little bit about probably one of the first encounters in Malala County about one of the ranchers that lives about 4 miles from town, right out on the edge of the valley. And he's got no trees around him. He's not in the wilderness area. He's on private property, and it was calving season. He gets up to make the 2 o'clock in the morning check. And a little sidebar here, most ranchers now carry a pistol when they go out, just because of the situation that we're in with wolves. And he went out the front door to make the check. The calving pen is right next to the house. He was a couple of hundred feet from the house. He thought something was strange because all of his old cow dogs wouldn't leave the porch. The two pups, they were excited to go because pups like to always go. And he had a light in one hand, a pistol in the other hand, and he got to the calving pen. The two pups took off running out through the calving pen full speed, and about 10 seconds later, they come running full speed back towards him with three wolves chasing him. And the wolves were running right, of course, the two pups are running right to him. The wolves are running right towards him. He actually did the right thing. He shot in the air. He didn't shoot those wolves. And he shot in the air, and as the pups went by him, the wolves veered off and turned around and got out of his flashlight and left. So he was within 50 to 75 feet of them, and they were running at him, but they were chasing his cow dogs.
And if he would have shot them?
If he would have shot those, what they tell us in from Idaho is that the agencies would have thrown the book at him. He would have been arrested for taking a endangered species, handcuffed, hauled to jail. He may well have been able to eventually defend himself and win. In Wallowa County, our county sheriff said he would not have arrested that individual, but the state police would have. The district attorney in Wallowa County said she wouldn't have prosecuted it, but the state attorney general said they would. And so what most people find is that by the time they're done, they've lost the ranch. They may well eventually not get convicted. They may not go to jail. They may not get a $100,000 fine and 5 years in jail. But the emotional trauma and the cost usually break somebody. They aren't on the ranch. They're fighting for their lives, and the ranch is lost a lot of times. That with that kind of turmoil, most I've talked to, they end up in divorce, and it's a disaster. So the shoot, shovel, shut up. I'm a relatively conservative person myself, but I have strongly recommended don't do it. Don't do it, because it's if anyone ever finds out, it is going to be years of court battles and various serious money and emotional problems.
Well, that's a biggie. And so people think, well, I live in a remote enough area that there's no way these guys will know or find me or whatever. And for the people that have been dealing with this, especially the folks in Idaho and the people in Oregon too, from everything you told us at that meeting in Doris, these animals are very well known to the agencies. I mean, it's unlikely that they're out there just roaming around and nobody knows where they are.
Very well known. In fact, in Oregon, the Wolf Plan requires that that a GPS collar be put on each pack, and then UHF radio collars, which are directional, just local line of sight collars, be put on some other animals. And so the GPS collar in our Imnaha pack uploads once every 4 to 6 hours, and they know which ridge they're on or which ridge they were on.
Hey, John. Hate to cut you off here. We're going to get cut off by the news without our.
Okay.
We're going to be back in 5 minutes. So grab some coffee, and we'll be back with everybody talking about wolves here. Hit the music, Bob.
If you're just tuning in, you are tuning in to the second hour of We the People Radio with your hosts, Aaron Ryan, Elizabeth Woodward, and Bob Martin. And Aaron commented on how long that disclaimer is, but I guess they have a lot to disclaim when we're going to be on.
Did it get longer because we had to push the button last week?
That was fun.
No, it's always been that long.
So, Bob, did you get to that button fast enough last week?
We're just very proactive when it comes to you two.
Yeah. I would advise that. That's probably smart.
What did you ask me?
Oh, did you get to the button fast enough last week? Nobody heard?
Yes, I did.
Good.
Well, the people listening on the stream heard.
Okay.
Nice. Okay.
But they were fine with it, apparently.
Yeah, no complaints. So you are listening to KCNR 1460 Community Radio for the North State. If you want to give us a call, the number is 530-605-4567, or jump on the chat room, and we're streaming live at wethepeopleradio.us. And if you go to that webpage, you will find links to all the shows that we have done over the last roughly 2.5 years. Each one is an individual link to email out far and wide. And everything about today's guest, John Williams, we're talking about
the real one, the real John Williams.
John, the other
Williams. Bob was laughing on the way out, the song on the way out from Star Wars, because, you know, the composer was John Williams. And John Williams used to be the Boston Pops conductor, and you have a popular name.
Did you get his email, too?
I'm still waiting for the royalty checks for those.
Yeah, that sucks, huh? You know,
I'm still waiting.
Funny how that works. I feel your pain. I'm in a spot now where there's another Aaron Ryan, and so now I have to be Aaron
there
Marie.
There is.
Yeah.
Where?
In my work.
So at
now
your work?
Yeah.
So no way.
I wondered why you started going with Marie.
Aaron Marie Ryan. Now I have to be in trouble all the time.
Oh.
It's just kind of weird. I've never had the same name as somebody else. So I'm new to this, John. How does it turn out in the end? Do you lose your identity, or are you okay?
You just get old enough, you don't worry about it.
Oh, right on. Okay.
I found out that at one point that there were two other Elizabeth Woodwards in Redding.
What?
Where we live. One was 20 years younger than me, and one was 20 years older. Isn't that wild?
Every 20 years we need one.
Yeah.
Okay. So now that Bob's on the phone, we don't know what he's doing over there.
Now that we've covered all the minutia that nobody cares about.
We're stalling for time. Bob's on the phone. He's the boss of us. We don't know what's going on. Hey, so, all right. John, talk to us about anything that you think that people probably aren't hearing out there or won't hear until all of a sudden the wolf thing is like too big of a deal, and the dialogue is over. Like, what should people be doing now ahead of the game?
You know, that's a really good point, because as I've talked to people over in Siskiyou County and so forth, I believe that you are headed towards the same experience of getting a wolf plan in California that Oregon had. And the reality is, in Oregon politics, what happens in the five counties around Multnomah and Portland is what happens in Oregon. And even though 31 other counties don't see it the same way politically, that's the way it happens. And my understanding of California politics is that the center of the power is much further south than where you guys live, and that you have a real uphill battle to get your voice heard. And in Oregon, when they started to write the Wolf Plan, they actually came out and did 10 town hall meetings. And Wallowa County is where those wolves were going to start, and they didn't even put one in Wallowa County. They put them around in the more populated areas, and the president of the Oregon Cattlemen Association at that time was very influential in getting the 11th town hall meeting in Enterprise. And they had been having a reasonable, 25 to 125 people at these meetings. Enterprise has 2,000 people in it, and 300 people packed the multipurpose room back in 2003 to give their input. And they were obviously very conservative and didn't want the wolf. And they called them, well, just a quote out of the paper back then, "Wolves are nature's terrorists. We don't need any more terrorists," Joseph Rancher said, drawing a large applause from the crowd. Others described wolves as the serial killer of the animal kingdom and a new spotted owl in reference to the endangered species from the timber wars. In the Enterprise meeting, like I said, there were 300 people that were there, and 297 of them were opposed to wolves. The final comment out of that is that wolves are going to come to Oregon, I guarantee you, said Lindsey Ball, who was the head of Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife at the time. The question is, what are we going to do about it? That's the question. We can get upset, and we can hold rallies, and we can march on the Capitol. The reality is, you're going to get them. And as much as I hate to say it, you do need a plan. But as the plan begins to be written, you need to be involved, and you need to be engaged. And as producers and ranchers, you need to be involved, because the impact on a ranch that is completely engaged with wolves is significant. You made a comment at the beginning where you said, well, a rancher had called you and said, I'm not having any trouble with wolves. I did a paper in 2010 on the impact, the financial impact on a ranch if you were fully engaged with wolves, and I want to emphasize that. If you're living among them 12 months out of the year, okay, summer range, winter range, calving, the wolves are around you, what would be the impact? And there are actually five categories where they're going to impact your operation. Depredation kills, everybody knows about. That came out, if you're looking at a ranch of about 350 head, that had come out to about $25 a head. Of every cow you owned, the losses would be $25 a head from your actual kills. Reduced weaning weight, because these cattle, when you turn them out, never settle down. They're always on the move. That's a reduced weaning weight, would cost another $21 to your ranch. The body condition score, and a rancher has to have his cow in pretty good flesh, carrying the right amount of weight going into calving, or they have calving trouble and milking troubles and so forth. That's important, and the ranchers in Idaho tell us that their cows have been coming in one body condition score lighter than they used to, which is about 90 pounds. To bring that cow back up to a body condition score 5, instead of being at a 4, costs another $55. The reduced conception rate, those cows keep moving. They never settle down. They have a harder time finding a bull if it's a big open country. Or more importantly, once they get bred, they don't settle. With almost a 10% reduction in conception rate, that's a $67 bill towards your bottom line. And then the biggest one, increased management costs. This is time spent checking your animals, fixing fences, going down and talking to the Department of Fish and Wildlife, getting permits, checking on dead cows, looking for dead cows, and on and on. That's a $92 bill against you for a total of $260 per head that you own in a year.
And that doesn't even factor in, because some people, we always try to bring up what folks are thinking but may not say here. You have a lot of people who think, well, you know, if they start killing my livestock, I'll be compensated for that. How's that working out in the real world?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, compensation would only compensate for that first $25 I talked about. They would compensate for confirmed depredation kills by wolves. In Oregon, we actually do probable kills as well. Confirmed, but only, there's a study out of Idaho, the Oakleaf study, that says only 1 out of 8 carcasses are found when they're eaten by wolves. The young ones, they're eaten completely consumed, 100%, all the bone, all everything. There's nothing left. If you have a larger animal, even the humerus and the femur and the shoulder blade and so forth are consumed by wolves. You find many times just a part of a skull and a little bit of backbone that may be all that's left. And that only 1 in 8 do you find. So you're only going to get compensated for 1 in 8. Mm-hmm. And then only for a possibility of $25 out of that $260.
And
but it really is $25 divided by 8, so it's a few dollars out of 260 that compensation would ever cover for you. So compensation, we supported it just because it might keep some of our producers in business a little while longer. It is money. The people that want wolves aren't necessarily the people that have wolves. There's a representative senator up in Washington that right now is submitting a bill that says that any wolf that's captured should be translocated to the place where people that live that want to have wolves, which is of course the West Side. And so it is a devastating economic effect, but I'd tell you it isn't even the biggest effect that's going to come.
Yeah.
The biggest effect that's going to come is the emotional stress that a rancher deals with. No rancher I know of raises his animals to be eaten by a wild animal. And when they attack you, then it becomes personal. And you're up at night. You're checking a lot more. I had a rancher who said that, you know, during the summer, he and his wife would get up and they would hay all day. And then they'd come in, take their bath, have a nice supper and really enjoy the evenings. And anymore, they grab a quick sandwich, they jump in the pickup, they drive out to where the cows are at, and every night they're in the thick of it. They spend time just out with their cows trying to protect them. And he has lost multiple cattle, including an 1,800-pound herd bull that was eaten by the wolves. And he's just emotionally drained.
Yeah.
He spent all of his life paying for the ranch. He thought as he got into his 60s that thing was going to be better. And now he's working 18 to 20 hours a day trying to keep him alive in the summertime.
Well, we have a lot of people who feel that, well, you know, this probably isn't going to come to California like it has in every other state, but I would submit, and I think you can back it up with research, that everybody right down the pipeline has been dealing with the exact same thing. It turns out to be the same problem. Here we're going to introduce, you know, a certain amount of wolves, and when we come back from the break, I'd like you to get into that whole breeding pair thing. because that's how they control the numbers, which means that they completely overpopulate. I don't think people realize that. And the other thing is, just to put a little pencil note there about the three reasons wolves kill. So for all those of us who really only read about wolves in books, you know, we think they're wild animals, live out in the wilderness, we'll never see them, and they're more afraid of us than we are of them. All that is completely fake. I mean, it's just completely fake.
And just for those consumers out there who only understand things when it hits their pocketbook, what's the state going to cost you?
Oh, it's going to cost a fortune. We're going to have tons of people monitoring them, and we can kiss off our beef cost. Oh, sorry, Bob, we're wrecking your music. We'll be right back in 2 minutes here at We the People Radio on KCNR, 1460 AM.
Called Wolf Creek Pass, which is up on the Great Divide. And we was sitting there sucking toothpicks and drinking knee-highs and onion soup mix. And I says, Earl, let's mail a card to Mother and then send them chickens on down to the other side. Yeah, let's give them a ride.
Wolf Creek Pass, way up on the Great Divide.
We're back. We're talking about wolves.
We're usually talking about wolves,
yeah,
but this time really talking about wolves.
Yeah, and these are the real wolves. And if you think that it's all about Little Red Riding Hood, we're here to destroy your illusions. We aim to do that, you know. And somebody on the chat room wanted to know if wolves eat liberals if they're empty calories. What do you think, John?
John's like, I'm a researcher. I don't go in for that. Hey, so
you don't have to answer that.
But like a lot of myth around wolves, you know, there's a lot of myth. And I learned from that presentation you did in Doris, you were talking about the three reasons that wolves kill, which is what makes them so destructive. It isn't just for eating.
That's correct. Yeah. Wolves kill for three different reasons. One is obviously they're hungry. They need to eat on a regular basis, and they will eat upwards to between 12 and 20 pounds a day on average. Now, they don't eat every day, but they do. Sometimes they will make a kill and they'll eat 10 to 20 pounds, and then they will set aside up to 40 or 50 pounds where they maybe can have that later. They also will eat, and other people say, so what's the impact on wildlife or so forth? To just get a sense of it, each wolf would be 12 to 22 elk a year. Now, those are our elk. Those aren't the Roosevelt elk. That's the Rocky Mountain elk that we're talking about. But that's an impact if you've got a whole bunch of wolves. And I'd heard somewhere where you said, somebody told me that they were the people that would like to have 400 wolves in Northern California. Well, you can take 12 to 22 elk per year times whatever your number is and see what that would be the impact on your elk population or livestock or whatever. But getting back to the three reasons, they kill because they're hungry. They kill to train their young. I talked about coming out of the den site and then moving over to the rendezvous site. They need to train those young pups how to kill. And they will do that, and many times they'll go out and do a lot of other, just a lot of killing and leave the animals on the ground because they're teaching the young. And then the last one, which is the most frustrating thing to me, is the sport killing. You'll come upon a scene and there'll just be a mass pile or area full of carcasses of whatever it is, whether it's deer or elk or sheep. And they just sport kill. They just will do it because they enjoy it. And that's those are many multiple numbers. Will eat very very little of it, and leave the carcasses. And so it isn't just we've been told. Well, they will eat just the old and the slow and the infirmed. And I tell people, well, that's okay till you line up all mammals and have a 100-yard dash. And do you know who's the slowest mammal? That'd be humans.
Mm-hmm.
If it really was the slow ones, we'd be the ones that they would be eating. So,
that's a good point.
It isn't true. I've seen them take down. I've seen videos of them taking down big, large bull elk. I've seen them take down large buffalo in Yellowstone and so forth. And we've had depredations, 700-pound healthy calves in the fall, full-grown cows, two of them right before calving. They don't really care how big the animal is when they decide to take it down. They just kind of, if they want to eat it, they eat what's in front of them.
Okay, and that's why you see periodically animals that are, you know, maimed or, you know, have a hind quarter taken out or something like that, and they're not dead. They don't necessarily, the sport killing and the training killing doesn't necessarily take the animal completely down.
It's a very, very good point. We don't have bears kill and then eat. Cougars pretty much kill and then eat. A lot of times the coyotes sometimes will start eating before they kill, but if they're in a pack, they will, or they'll eat dead stuff. Wolves start eating as soon as they can get a hold of the animal. And they start eating on an animal, and it's still alive, and they will continue to eat on it, and the animal will stay alive until they hit something critical, and they die. But there's the wolf will start with many times with the flank or behind in the armpit, behind the front shoulder. On a large animal, if they can get to it, the tail head, they like to eat the tail head. If it's a young calf, they will just reach over the withers and crush the rib cage and so forth. But on the larger animals, once they can start eating, they go ahead and they get them hamstrung and they can't go anywhere and they'll just go at it. And when they're sport killing and so forth, but you said it, there was they'll eat a little bit and move on. The first big kill in Oregon was a sheep operation in Baker County, and they killed 26 sheep in a lot right beside the house, and they did it in the middle of the night. And when the sheep farmer came out and looked at his herd the next morning, he couldn't even tell they were dead. They were just laying there. And many of them, the wolf had gone in and opened up right through the sternum, the breastplate, and gone in and eaten the heart and the liver, and that was it.
Oh my God!
And they left and moved on, and that was
so.
That
they
was
actually have surgical precision.
They do. Another really interesting thing about when the wolves seem to have a. They have massive teeth, but they aren't horribly sharp. And many times you'll look at a carcass and you say, well, I don't see any, there might be some scratch marks or whatever from the teeth, but sometimes there's nothing. And then when you skin it, there's massive trauma underneath the skin where they have bitten and crushed that muscle inside, but didn't actually break the skin. Which is, I would have thought they'd have sharp teeth and it would be really easy to see, but that's not the case on the wolf. They're very, like I said, the teeth seem to not be quite as sharp as maybe some of the others, and so there's a lot of trauma many times under the skin that you don't see. And you're right, they do start to eat if they're eating before they die. It's many times one of the ways you identify whether it was a wolf or not is the scene or the location of the kill. If you go into a cougar or a bear, a lot of times that's a one place. The carcass is laying in the middle of where they were killed, and that's it. With a wolf, the scene may start yards or dozens of yards up the hill. And the first attack started, and the blood started coming out, and pieces of the animal are strewn all over, and it was a horrific battle that went on, and we've seen that. That's one of the traits. If you don't see any struggle, you're wondering if it was a wolf.
And you have all these different. Types of issues happening all at the same time. But at the end of the day, let's face it, if a guy comes out and finds, you know, 26 of his sheep have been annihilated in the night, I mean, okay, you can just go with just the math. That's a massive loss right there.
That's a massive loss.
But it's just got to, okay, so you've got kids. Let's say you've got kids and that part of their 4-H project and they get up every morning and they feed them and they do all that stuff. I mean, this literally, I like the idea that these are four-legged terrorists. I mean, that's just, they're not out there eating wild animals all the time.
We had an interesting go, but it's a longer story and we can probably tell this morning, but way back when those hearings were happening, the one in Portland happened, and kids from an internal school in Portland came as part of their class project and did rap music supporting the wolf and so forth. And some of the ranchers from Central Oregon or from the John Day country had bussed over to go to it, and they were pretty upset that a school would actually be, you know, supporting the wolf. And they did the right thing. The county judge went back the next day and did a presentation to that inner city school, and started an exchange. And, in extension, we've started an exchange with the inner city. The Sunnyside Environmental School in downtown Portland, comes to four or five, almost six counties now. And we just put these middle school kids on ranches for 5 days. And there's really no agenda other than that you've got to start seeing the other side of this, the other side of the picture. And so we have these young kids, we get about a dozen a year, and we put them on ranches, and they stay there for 5 days, and they live with the families, and they, if you get up at 2 o'clock, they get up at 2 o'clock and so forth, and they just learn that we're, that ranching is a human process, and it's, that ranchers care, and then people from the ranchers learn that the kids from the inner city are pretty much the same as we are. And so it's been a very productive process, but we have one rancher here who every year he lets each of these kids tag their own calf, and so that calf gets to be, and they put the little girl's name on the tag. And this year the rancher brought the tag in June and said this little girl's calf was just confirmed as a wolf kill. That was kind of a significant, you know, you talk about a 4-H project or something, but here was this one girl who kind of got to have the connection with one calf on a ranch here, and it actually was the wolf kill that happened that day. And out of 400 head on that place, it's interesting that was the one the wolf decided to take, but I guess, you know, Murphy's Law is always strange.
Yeah, education's a tough tool. Okay,
it is a tough tool, but it was a very good experience in the sense of, oh, by the way, it's indiscriminate, completely indiscriminate, and emotionally very stressful for the people.
All righty, we're going to take a quick break and come back because that's the part that people need to know. Thanks, John. We'll be back talking a little bit more about wolves here at KCNR, 1460 AM, home of Free Fire Media. All are now.
Yeah.
but honestly, I mean, it's kind of good you played the cartoon thing because that's really where most people's education comes from, I think. That and National Geographic.
That's where we learned about wolves.
That is where we learned about wolves. Yeah.
Yeah, if you just built your house a brick, you didn't have to worry about
it. It's no big deal. Yeah, crazy. Okay. What are we missing, John? What are we leaving out?
I'd like to talk a little bit about a research that we're working on.
Do it.
So in 2008, the cattle industry in the state of Oregon came to Oregon State University and asked us to start studying the issues around wolves and livestock. And so we created a long-term research project that we're actually in year five in right now that looked at cattle behavior, cattle productivity, and the farm and ranch economics around the impact of wolf presence in your livestock operations. And we did that by, we've got three ranches in Idaho in the thick of wolves, and we've got three ranches in Oregon that was started out being no wolves, and now it's low-density wolves and high-density wolves because we actually have a few around. We put tracking collars on the cows, and we put them on 10 cows randomly selected out of each operation. And so we at that point had 60 collars on cows. We've actually upped that to 100 collars now. And that collar goes off once every 5 minutes and tells us where that cow's at, what she's doing, what her speed is, and so forth. And, of course, we get a GPS sighting, and then we get an elevation and so forth. We take those collars off in the fall and get that information. And the goal was to get collared wolves that would actually have collars and would do the same thing. And because we couldn't take the collars off in the fall of wolves, we put that as a 15-minute download to acquire the GPS sightings. And due to a lot of politics and so forth, we've actually gotten the data off of one wolf. We've gotten the data off of our cows every year, and we get the information that allows us to look at cattle movement, cattle site preferences, wolf movement, wolf site preferences, wolf activity patterns, and then wolf and cattle interactions. And we actually had a significant wolf impact on one of the ranches, or actually all of the ranches that were involved in Idaho. So we do know that we're dealing with research from ranches that are impacted. One ranch lost 60 calves to wolves in 1 year, 5 cows and a yearling, all in the same year. Another rancher, just a different, showed that he only had an 80% weaning rate that year, down almost 6 or 7%. One ranch had 11 wolves killed off of it, and between January 1 and August in 2009. So a lot of wolf activity. And what did we find? You know, what we found was our wolf, that's one wolf, he traveled 11.4 miles a day on average. The lowest day was 2.3 miles. The highest day was 27 miles. And as I told you, we've actually had a wolf in Oregon that we tracked at that 30-plus miles. And what we've kind of seen as a difference in Idaho, where there's pack after pack after pack, and they're all bunched together, the wolves don't travel quite so far or have quite as big an area, but when you don't have any wolves next door, the area gets much larger. So we looked at how the wolf interacted with our 10 collared cows, and we were in hopes with our research that once in a while the cows and the wolf would cross tracks and we could tell what was happening. It actually happened quite a few times. The range of the wolf for that 1 year was 53 square miles, or excuse me, 210 square miles. It was 53 miles around the circumference. And we saw a daily travel kind of a difference. They would travel more some days and less some days in a pattern. They'd get more and more and more, and then it would drop off. And then it would be more and more and more for 4 or 5 days. We have a supposition that we believe that was probably related to wolf kills. They'd have a kill, and they'd fill up their belly and lay around. And then they'd move a little more, and then they'd eat more, and then they'd lay around, and so, you know, we can start seeing some patterns just to learn a little bit about what happens and to get a sense, not just anecdotal, but some actual data. And it also gave us information such as I talked about earlier. What about houses? A lot of people who like wolves say, well, you know, if you get your livestock in close to houses, then that'll keep them back. So does the presence of dwellings reduce wolf activity? We had our collared wolf sit within 350 feet, 350 yards for 24 hours. This was a house, little kids, dogs, horses in the corral and so forth, sat right in the thicket. Now, remember, this wolf, this collared wolf, was one of 12 in a pack. We don't know how many of the other wolves were there, but we know our collared wolf sat and watched, or seemed to have watched that house for over 24 hours, or very nearly 24 hours.
Wow.
We calculated all the cumulative GPS points from the wolf, and we metered how many meters from houses they were. We saw absolutely no effect on where she went. He went where there was close to houses, not close to houses. Was not seeming to be what he was worried about. We found that the wolf travels much more at night, not necessarily nocturnal. Somebody told me what the word was, but there's a whole lot more activity at night than in the daytime. During the night, he was traveling of over 1,000 meters an hour. And during the daylight hours, it was down below 400 meters an hour. What time of the day did we see encounters? And we took an encounter and said if the wolf collar's going off once every 15 minutes and the cow collar's going off once every 5 minutes, if those two individuals get within 500 meters of each other, we'll call it an encounter. And we were hoping to having some, and it turned out there was 783 of those encounters. And so we said, well, let's get a little closer and put 100 meters. Now, that's a football field and an end zone for those of us that don't do meters. Mm-hmm. And out of the 53 encounters between our collared wolf and our 10 collared cows on that one ranch, 52 of them were at night. So that gives you pause when you tend to look at it and say, does a day rider do us any good? Probably not. Just understanding when those cows and when the wolf were getting together. We're now just analyzing velocities of the cows and seeing if we can put those encounters and see if there's a velocity difference, and we really don't have the research done on that yet. We are seeing a pattern to where the wolves spend more time in the grazing allotments. The cows spend less time, and they're attempting to go home, which can be a real problem for a rancher. If you take your cows, you put them out in the pasture, you spread them out, and you think things are going well, and then you have a wolf attack, and all your cows go up to the fence that's closest to the ranch, you got a lot of work to do to get those back out to where they won't cause significant impact on your ranching operation. So we're a little tidbits like that. And then we also use these collars in a little different. We have some collars that we put on cows that are 1 second collars, and they go off every 1 second, which lets us get to velocities and more importantly in riparian areas, how close do they spend time next to the stream and so forth. Some of that stuff has nothing to do with wolves, but it's really great information. And we were doing some of that research over on an experiment station next door. And when we downloaded the data, the grad student came over and got us and said, hey, we got maybe something you should look here. And we had instances where the velocities were exceeding 6 miles an hour for extended length of time, like for 20 minutes. That doesn't happen if you're a cowman. If your cow is going over 6 miles an hour, something's moving it. And we put little shows up where movies that you've got a link on your website that you can go look at what movement happens on our cows. But we showed movement over 6 miles an hour three different times with our research cows, one of 21 minutes, one of 6 minutes, and one of 12 minutes. And then we found two dead calves in there that were possible wolf kills. It's really frustrating. If you're a rancher, you want to say, well, I want to know whether that was a wolf or not. And when the final determination came out, and because we didn't find those calves for about a week, it was really difficult to tell. Here's the report. The report was, well, it's a large predator attack, And the animal was, there was instigated by chasing, and there was stress-related death. And it is, by the way, highly atypical of cougar or bear, and there's no dogs around, but they couldn't confirm it as a wolf kill.
Therefore, you don't get to apply for a depredation permit. You don't get compensated. You pretty much just.
That's exactly right. And but think about it. It's a large predator. It's not a bear. It's not a cougar.
Right.
There's no large dogs around. And by the way, it's consistent with the information that how a wolf kills, but they couldn't confirm it even as a probable. That's why if you're a rancher, if you find something, report it immediately. Here's just another little bit. So here were 85 cows with the 85 calves in one pasture. They were attacked three different times in about a two-week period. And additional information, out of those 85 calves, 20 of those calves had to be retreated for respiratory problems. Five of the cows were crippled. Three of the cows aborted. There was a herd. The herd lost weight. And there was a strong behavioral change that was expressed by handling because you couldn't handle those animals anymore. And that's something we haven't brought up is what these cows do. I mean, you can no longer use your cow dogs once they've been attacked and boogered by wolves. In a lot of country, and particularly in our canyon country, if you can't use your cow dogs, you're almost out of business. But these cows never stop moving. They attack any dog you can see. You go out to feed them in the wintertime, the cow dog's on the back of the pickup, they're attacking the pickup. Very aggressive and very difficult to move. And that tends to wear off over time with some of the cows. It doesn't tend to wear off with other cows.
Okay, and we've got to take a really, really quick break. But in the meantime, I want to point out to people that it's on the webpage, wethepeopleradio.us. When you go there, scroll down just a little bit, and it says wolf tracking videos or cow movies, and you can watch the video that he was talking about with the cows moving. And tell you what, a cow running 6 miles an hour is quite something. You can see these yellow dots of the cows scurrying all over. So I would encourage you to take a look at that, and also to send those to other folks who, again, think this is no big deal. It's a coming. Alrighty, we're going to be back in 2 minutes and finish up the hour with John Williams. We're talking about wolves here at We the People Radio on KCNR 1460 AM.
Every day things change. The world puts on a new face. Certain things we arrange, and this old world seems like a new place. Oh yeah, secretly I've been trailing you like a fox that preys on a rabbit. To get you, and so I knew I had to learn your ways and habits.
Well, for the wolf man, you gon' dig in till the day you die.
It's all according to how your boogaloo situation stands, you understand?
Well, for the wolf man.
Okay, everybody that remembers Wolfman Jack, raise your hand.
Oh yeah.
You're late, good company.
Yeah, late night on your transistor radio under your pillow when you were supposed to be
back
in bed.
Back when times were simple.
I don't know if they were that simple. We were just clueless.
So we are up against simple, the last 5 minutes of We the People Radio this Sunday. We're talking about wolves with John Williams. And if we don't get a chance to say thank you, John, we'll do it now in case we run into the news hour and don't have a chance to thank you very much for coming on today.
It's been a pleasure, and I've enjoyed the time, and I hope what I've brought to you is useful.
This is the side that nobody hears, you know, and even the people who are, animal lovers, they don't have to necessarily be animal rights people, but people who think, oh, you know, the wolves are a majestic creature, and yeah, we should bring them back because it's a shame they're lost from the landscape. I think it's important to know what they do to the people and the other animals in their path. Because it isn't just that they eat for food. There are all these other things going on. I mean, Elizabeth had the video up watching the little yellow dots of the cattle huddled in a bunch. And I'm thinking, it's weird watching your little cow movies. You can see the cows panicking, mm-hmm. even though they're just dots on a screen.
Yeah. They look like they're trying to figure out how to get out of it and where to go.
Yeah.
You see that. Yes, that's true.
And then the wolf is circling them.
Yeah, he just keeps moving around. You can see the cows like, nah, you know.
Yeah.
So for people that are people that have had this a long time, you know, you guys have been dealing with this for a pretty long time there in Eastern Oregon. You know, what are you doing? I mean, what are you going to do? People just give up their ranch and just forget it?
People are fighting back, and of course. We're participating in everything that we're supposed to do so that we qualify for compensation. Even to have the wolves killed under the Oregon Wolf Plan, ranchers have to participate in non-lethal actions, like putting up flattery and being out there and spending more time and things like that. So we're following the rules and doing what needs to be done, and I applaud the local ranchers that they haven't gone to the triple S method, and that they are but they're getting frustrated, and they do believe that their constitutional right to protect their private property has been taken. They don't necessarily agree with it. They don't believe that the wolves have to go away. Where we hope to get is to get these wolves delisted. And then go like Canada has done. And in Canada, if a wolf attacks livestock, it is taken out, and it's taken out immediately. And every wolf that is found with it is taken out immediately. And if it happens multiple times, the whole pack is taken out. And then they live with wolves, and they do it without, at least close to an acceptable level of depredation. And part of that is the number of animals that you have, but more importantly, it's the feeling that I got the right to go do something about it if I find the problem.
Sure, because at the end of the day, I mean, our program is always about, you know, liberty issues. And I had somebody early in the chat room saying, well, what's this got to do mm-hmm. with our freedom and liberty? I mean, this isn't politics.
The freedom to protect your property,
and,
right there.
And it doesn't get more freedom and liberty than this yeah. particular issue, because this is right at the heart of a lot of different things. It's right at the heart of rural America, which, I mean, we're getting it from every side. But
ranchers tell us it's a private property right. It's a yep. constitutional right mm-hmm. that's being infringed of it.
Exactly. And so for more information or to contact people that are in that industry, could you, if anything you send me, I'll put on this page. How'd that be?
All right. We'll do it.
Thanks, John.
We thank you very, very much for getting up and spending Sunday morning with us.
All right. Well, good luck.
Thanks.
We'll see you down the road.
All righty. Hit it, Bob.
All right. Thank you, Aaron. Thank you, Elizabeth.
And thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Williams.